Hare Krishna. So I hope you all enjoyed the Ram Navami festival that was celebrated this morning and afternoon in the temple. The birthdays of the Lord are always very joyous occasions, and they especially present wonderful opportunities to come to the association of devotees and to hear and chant about the Lord and to see His beautiful forms and to serve Him in so many other ways. So today is our last session of the Ram Katha. And I thought today I'd like to speak about two devotees from relatively recent times. Thus far, we have been speaking from the Valmiki Ramayana, episodes which pertain to Treta Yuga, long, long ago. But now we'll speak about pastimes or incidents that happened with great devotees of Lord Ram in more recent times. I'd like to speak about two devotees. The first one is a devotee called Ram Das. That doesn't say much, does it? Servant of Ram. There were many Ram Dasas, of course. And to distinguish this Ram Das from the others, he is called Ram Das of Bhadrachalam. Some of you probably who came to a yatra last year may have heard this. So Bhadrachalam is a place in South India, and it has a history that goes back a long, long way. A few words about how the place came to be known as Bhadrachalam and how the deities manifested there would be in order. There was the sun of Mount Meru and Menaka, whose name was Bhadra. And Bhadra was a very devout person. He was especially devoted to Lord Ram. He performed austerities for a long time. And he prayed that the Lord should manifest. And because he was a son of Mount Meru, he was also a hill. And he prayed that Lord Ram would manifest and remain on his head. We see even in Braj, there are many hills. Apart from the Govardhan Hill, there is Nandishwar Mountain on which there is Barsana. You know, there are numerous such on which there is Nandagram. And there is also the mountain of Brahma on which there is Barsana. So sometimes demigods or devotees, they transform into mountains just to be able to serve the Lord by hosting his pastimes or his abode upon themselves. So Bhadra wanted that. So this was the Treta Yuga. And this was the time when Lord Ram was going southwards in search of Sita. And they happened to pass by. And the Lord bestowed his mercy upon Bhadra. And Bhadra wanted the Lord to come and reside here. But Ram said, I have to go for a very important business. I have to rescue my wife who was kidnapped. But I promise you, on the way back from Lanka, I'll come back here. I'll stop here. And then I'll spend time with you. So Bhadra was expectantly waiting. But as it happened, from Lanka, Lord Ram took a non-stop flight. And he didn't halt because there was a Pushpak Viman that was originally the property of Kuber, the half-brother of Ravana. And then that was usurped by Ravana. And now it came into the hands of Lord Ram. It was offered by Vibhishan for his service. So, and Lord Ram has so many things on his mind. You know, he had to get back to Ayodhya and the coronation would take place. Devotees in Ayodhya had been waiting for 14 years. So in any case, as the airplane flew back, he couldn't stop. And then the Lord finished his pastimes on the earth, 11,000 years of his pastimes finished, and he went to Vaikuntha again, the spiritual world. And then after he returned, he remembered, oh, I forgot. I was supposed to go to Bhadra, the sage, and I was supposed to give my mercy to him. Oh my God, I've forgotten. He didn't say, oh my God, it's just... So, he's God himself, so... He may say, oh my devotee, or whatever. So he just remembered, oh, what have I done? He'll be so disappointed. So he just left everything and rushed. And in that hurry, he forgot that as Lord Ram, he was two-armed because he had appeared in the human species. In Vaikuntha, he is four-armed. So he came in front of Bhadra with four arms, but it was too late. By the time he came, he was already there. And that is why the deities there are of Ram with four hands. That is generally not seen. Generally, when you see deities of Lord Ram, he is a two-armed form. So when, and he came there exactly as he is in the Vaikuntha world. And with four arms and with Sita Devi and Lakshman and so on. And then Bhadra requested them to please stay on my head. And the Lord kindly consented. So time went by. Years and years and years went by. Kali Yuga began. The centuries of Kali Yuga also rolled by. So because of thousands of years having passed by, now these deities somehow or the other were lost. Somehow. Then, some centuries ago, there was this tribal lady who used to live around that area. And she was a devotee of Lord Ram. So the Lord somehow appeared to her and guided her as to where he would be found, meaning the deity. So she found the deity, she was very joyful, and she made a little hut for these deities. She was a tribal lady living in the forest. What did she have? She didn't have any materials to make a proper temple building. So she just had something made of some sticks and grass and straw and things like that. Now it so happened that there was an officer of the Muslim king of that area. The Muslim king's name was Tana Shah. And this particular officer, who was his revenue officer, his name was Gopanna. So Gopanna, his duty was to go and collect the taxes from people and deposit that in the treasury of the king. So he would do that diligently. And the king was very pleased with him. But he was also a devotee of Lord Ram. And somehow one time, there was some fair or something, and this tribal lady, she brought the deities with her. And he was fascinated to see the deities. He was captivated by the beauty of the deities and wanted to know from this lady where the Lord resided. And she took him into the forest and showed him that little hut, not even a hut actually. And Gopanna felt very bad about it. He said, the Supreme Lord doesn't even have a proper place to stay. We must build a nice, magnificent temple for him. So he came back to the city. And he requested some of the people who were wealthy to donate money so they could build a grand temple for Lord Ram. But because the project cost was so high, there was a deficit. Sounds familiar? And so then he realized that this money that's come in by donations is not going to suffice. So some of the people suggested to him, look, you're a revenue officer. You know what you should do? Just take away some of the money that you're collecting as taxes. Instead of depositing it with the treasury of the king, you just use it for the construction of the temple. And of course, the thought had crossed his mind, and he decided to do that. So a beautiful temple was built. And not only that, once the deities are there, then you have to have wonderful outfits. You need so much of jewelry and so many other things are required. So he lavishly spent and got gorgeous outfits and jewelry and everything like that. But you know, the nature of this world is there are always people who are envious. Whatever you do, even if you do something good or you do bad, there's always someone who's unhappy. So some people were envious. So they went and complained to the Muslim king. You know what your treasurer has, your officer has done? He has diverted the tax money and siphoned off this money and used it for building a temple of Lord Ram. Serious offense, misappropriation of government funds. So the king was annoyed, very angry. So he arrested Gopanna. And Gopanna admitted, he said, yes, I did it because that's the need. These are your subjects. So it's in the public interest. But that didn't cut any ice with the king. He said, I'm going to put you in jail. And you will continue to be in jail till such time as the money is recovered and you deposit it in my treasury. Now, poor Gopanna, what could he do? He was in jail. Lord Ram went into exile for 14 years. The Pandavas went into exile for 13 years. And poor Gopanna was put into prison for 12 whole years. And in those days, prisons were not comfortable places. They are not today as well. But still, if you look at the prisons today, there is a fair degree of comfort, especially in the Western countries. You have so many other facilities. But in those days, a prison meant that there was just a small dingy room without windows and you had to live there for 12 years. It was very, very difficult. It can break anybody's spirit. So Gopanna lived there. And because he was a devotee, he was very surrendered to the Lord and he would compose songs and poems. Later on, he became known as Ramdas, the same Gopanna. Became known as Ramdas. And Ramdas's kirtans, his devotional songs, are very famous for those who know the Telugu language in South India. Any of you know Telugu language? You have heard of Ramdas of Bhadrachalam? Yes? So you've heard of his kirtans, Ramadasu Kirtanalu. Yes? So he was writing these beautiful songs and he wrote one called Dasharatha Shatakam. So he was pleading to the Lord for mercy. He was acknowledging the Lord's mercy. He was also pleading for the Lord's mercy because whatever it may be, to be imprisoned in that kind of situation is a very severe test. Not easy at all. Somehow or the other, he was just managing to live. And in those days, the king would also torture. The king's people would torture the prisoners as well. So it was very difficult. And he would write these songs, beseeching the Lord to rescue him. And he would say, please, at least agree to my request. What is your problem? He would tell Ram. You know, I've got a temple built for you. You know, so why have you done this to me? So, and in the course of it, then one day after several years, his patience wore thin. And then he burst forth into another song. And each of those stanzas are beautiful. I don't know the Telugu language. But I'll just tell you some of the things he said there. He tells the Lord, "My dear Lord, there are all these wonderful, expensive jewels that are there that adorn your lordships. And who do you think gave it to you? Your father-in-law Janaka didn't give it as dowry. And your father Dashrath, what did he do? He just sent you out of the kingdom. You're just a pauper. He didn't give you anything. He gave it to your brother. You have nothing. And my dear Lord, just look at Sita Devi's waist belt made of gold and jewels. Who do you think gave that? Did you get it?" And he went on describing some of the different, you know, adornments and ornaments of the Lord. And where did this come from? Did you bring it? No, I got it for you. Did you do that? No, I did it for you. And look, what do I get? In return for all this service, you put me in jail. So he continued to do that. Of course, the relationship was very sweet. He was saying that he was accusing the Lord, but there was a kind of a very sweet relationship between him and the Lord. So you see, sometimes gratitude, compassion, these things have extraordinary connotations and dimensions in the realm of devotional service, you know. What constitutes gratitude? What constitutes compassion? So putting Ramadas in jail for 12 years, was that compassion? An ordinary vision, it obviously doesn't seem like that. And Ramdas's poems, almost chastising the Lord, is it gratitude? May not seem like that. But it's like that. And the more we get into the intricacies of devotional service, the more we begin to realize things are not as straightforward as they seem. It's very subtle, very intricate. So anyway, he was telling the Lord all these things. And then finally he said, "I think it's not going to work. But yes, I should tell Sita Devi. Maybe she should put some pressure on him and then it might work." You know, because you try something with the husband, doesn't work, tell the wife to please, you know, push. So then he started praying to Sita Devi. He said, "Please, please, you're more merciful than your husband. You please rescue me. Just see the condition I am in. It's been years and I'm suffering like anything here. So please do something." You know, Sita Devi, being the feminine counterpart of Godhead, she was very kind, very compassionate. So she felt very sorry for Gopanna. So she told her husband, Lord Ram, "Please, can't you do something about him? You know, you put him in jail like this. It's been years. He's suffering so much." So Ram said, "What can I do? You know, but he gave you so many jewels and has given us all of these things." So Ram replied, "I never asked him to give it to me. And in any case, I'm a prince, I'm a king. And I know how much trouble it is, you know, to ensure that state funds are not misappropriated. So why did he have to steal the funds from the king and use it for the temple? I never asked him to build a temple for me. I never asked him to get us all these costly ornaments and clothes and so on. And in any case," Ram said, "if I have to get him out of jail, I'll have to pay that enormous amount of money that he siphoned off and misappropriated. I'll have to pay to that Muslim king. Where do I get that money from?" So then Sita Devi, of course, is none other than Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. So she made the arrangements. And then a miraculous thing happened. One night, actually, the king, Tanasha, had been waiting for a long time for him to pay money. And he had said, "I'll wait for 12 years, but if the money doesn't come, then I'm going to kill you." And the time was almost over. And he was, as the folk tale goes, he was going to pass the death penalty tomorrow, the next day. And just the night before that, there were these two mysterious visitors who came into the inner chambers of Tanasha, King Tanasha, even as he was lying asleep. And as he woke up, he was surprised. He was astounded to see these very two effulgent, strong-looking, handsome personalities. And he wondered, first of all, how on earth did they get inside my inner chambers? I've got dozens and dozens of security guards and layers of security. How did they come in the first place? In any case, he says, "So what do you want? Who are you? What are your names? And why have you come here?" So one of them replied, "My name is Ramoji." And the other said, "My name is Lakshmoji." So this thing is still a very well-known tale, a pastime in that region. So even children, they all know this story. So Ramoji and Lakshmoji, "Okay, so why have you come here?" "We have come to return the money that Gopanna had taken away from your treasury, that he misappropriated. So here are the gold coins." And in fact, they kept a huge pile of gold coins that was far larger in number than the number that Gopanna had taken away for building the Ram temple. He was surprised. And then they asked for a receipt. You know. So right there and then the Nawab, that is the Muslim king, he just signed, he gave the receipt. And the two left, Ramoji, Lakshmoji left. And then they went into the prison from the window, they pushed in the receipt. And it fell on the floor and Gopanna saw this little receipt. He said, "What, the king's signature? And that he has received this money?" Meanwhile, the Muslim king was shocked. This was a transformational experience for him. He said, "Who are these people? These look like that same Ram that this Gopanna fellow worships." You know, so he realized what had happened. And he ran, he gave an instruction, "Just stop that execution, stop that execution." So then finally he also ran to the prison and he fell at the feet of Gopanna. He said, "Gopanna, now I have realized you are such an exalted soul. I have really committed so much offense against you, much injustice, and I've put you through so much suffering. Please forgive me." And he fell at his feet. And Gopanna, of course, was just happy to be free again. And then the king said, "I've got all the money, but I don't want this money now. I want to give it to you. Use it for the Lord's service." And then he gave him lots of land around that temple. That was the custom in those days, that whenever a temple was built, there were always large tracts of land that the king would give to the temple. So that would serve the purpose of providing whatever was needed for the upkeep of the priests who lived there and served there, and also to provide everything that was needed for the service of the deities. So he gave a lot of land. And that's how everything came back to normal, but not quite. Our Gopanna, or Ramdas as he was known by now, was still not happy. So now he wrote another song. And he said, "I am the one who builds the temple. I give you all the luxurious setting there, all the jewelry, all the nice clothing, everything. You send me to jail. And then somehow or the other, you want to free me. You decide after 12 years that you want to free me. And instead of coming to me and apologizing to me for the inconvenience you have put me through, you should have had to come to me and told me, 'Sorry, I'm releasing you.' What did you do? You gave darshan to that Muslim fellow." So, interesting how the Lord works. The Lord can give mercy to whoever. That Muslim king, of course, there's some history about it. It's a folk tale about who he was in the previous life and so on and so forth. In any case, at least in this life, he was a Muslim king. This Muslim king had darshan of Ram and Lakshman, And poor Gopannav Ramdas, you know, he had to be there and he never got the darshan. But did Ramdas receive the mercy of the Lord? Yes, who knows? The ways of the Lord are inconceivable, very hard to understand. What kind of karma Gopanna must have had from previous lives, and what kind of messages was the Lord trying to convey to the world through Gopanna? So very interesting. So therefore from that day, of course, because it was the hill of Bhadra, it was Bhadrachalam. Achala refers to a hill. So he became known as Ramdas of Bhadrachalam. So the very famous and popular deities of Sita, Ram, Lakshman are there. And although it's far away, there's no major place or an airport or something like that nearby, but still thousands and thousands of pilgrims come there every day. And on certain days like Ram Navami, like today, there'll be hundreds of thousands of people who come to this temple at Bhadrachalam. So somehow if you have more time on your next visit to India, and if you happen to be in that side of the country, drop into Bhadrachalam. And remember these little pastimes that I just spoke about. The next devotee that I want to speak about is a king called Kulashekhar. He was an Alwar. He was connected to the Sri Sampradaya, one of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. These Alwars were 12 very, very exalted devotees of the Lord who appeared at different times, anything from 6,000 to 1,000 years ago, at different times in this range. And they were all from diverse backgrounds. Some of them came from Brahmana backgrounds, some of them came from Akshatriya backgrounds, one of them was a lady, Andal. So the seventh in this list of 12 was a king whose name was Kulashekhar. Kulashekhar is known to us as devotees of ISKCON because of the book that Srila Prabhupada began translating but did not complete. He left it halfway because he had to do other things, and somehow after that he did not get the time to complete it. And that book is the Mukunda Mala Stotra. Stotra means prayers or certain verses. Mukunda Mala are the garland. It is a garland of verses offered to Lord Mukunda or Lord Krishna. Beautiful poems, beautiful verses of devotion, utmost devotion, containing all the esoteric and simple and deep devotional truths. Mahajano yena gatah panta. Therefore, the need to follow great Mahajans like King Kulashekhar. Dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam. The deepest truths of dharma or of spiritual life reside within the hearts of great devotees. And their compositions, their songs, their verses, etc., they are nothing but spontaneous outpourings of their deep devotion. And in this Mukunda Mala Stotra we have, does anyone remember, or you can say any of the famous verses of Mukunda Mala Stotra, which is the most famous one which Srila Prabhupada often quoted? Yes, that's right. Pranabandhu Prabhu. Krishna Tvadiya Padapanka Japanjarantam Adyaiva Me Vishatumana Saraja Hansa Prana Prayana Samayeka Favata Pittaihi Kantha Varodhana Vidhau Smaranam Kutaste. King Kulashekhar placed praise to Krishna and says, "My dear Lord, please let me leave this world now itself. When my body is healthy, your lotus feet are like the stems of the lotus, and my mind is like a swan. Just as swans like to put their heads into the network of the lotus stems, let me also place my consciousness, my mind, at your lotus feet right now, and let me leave the world. Because if I wait till the point of death by the usual natural causes, then the mucus, bile and air will accumulate in the throat, and it will be so painful and so hard to remember you. Srila Prabhupada cited this verse or quoted it several times in his lectures, in his purports, and sometimes he would also set it to music and sing it, like he would sing the songs of various acharyas. So therefore it is clear that Srila Prabhupada accorded a lot of importance to King Kulashekhar, his work, Mukundamala Stotra. However, not much is known about King Kulashekhar. He came in a very illustrious lineage of great kings of the Chera dynasty in the southernmost state of India called Kerala. And in Travancore, what is currently called Travancore, there is still in Thiruvananthapuram, Trivandrum, the capital city of Kerala, there is a magnificent and ancient temple called the deity is Anantapadmanabh Swami. And this temple was recently, maybe a year or two ago, in the news because vast treasures were found in one of the treasure houses there. These rooms are supposed to be locked and not opened. And the kings would just deposit the wealth there, considering this wealth to be the wealth of the deities and not their own wealth. And nobody is supposed to open those vaults. So the kings in that dynasty were all great devotees. and they always considered themselves as servants of the Lord. Even the one recently, when this whole controversy broke out and it came out in the press and television films about how much money, how much gold and jewels are there in the vaults of Anantapadmanabh Swami temple. And the king was interviewed. He just died, I think, just some months ago. Very saintly person, very good devotee. And he said, this is not mine. I'm not claiming it. It is the Lord's property. We are only dasas. We are only servants. So even till today, the kings have been maintaining that mood. And every one of them had this mood for thousands and thousands of years. These are the modern day Raja Rishis, you know, the saintly kings. So this was the line in which Kulashekhar appeared. And when he was born to his father, Maharaj Dridhavrata, his father had and his wife, the queen, had already been childless for many, many years. Somehow the king had prayed to Lord Narayan, and Lord Narayan had been pleased, and he was blessed with a son, Kulashekhar. This was around the 27th year of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga has started approximately 3100 BC, 3125, or something like that, thereabouts, a little over 5000 years ago. So the 27th year of Kali Yuga was when Kulashekhar was born. He was a very brilliant child. He exhibited all the auspicious symptoms and extraordinary symptoms of a noble soul and of a very, very powerful and intelligent person. So he was trained in the arts of kingship, of warfare, of diplomacy, economics. Basically, he was trained to be a good king. And he was also trained in the scriptures. He studied the Vedangas, he studied the four Vedas. And in this way, he was quite equipped to take charge of his father's kingdom. The father, when he saw that the son had grown up enough and had reached adulthood, he took vanaprastha and retired into the forest to perform austerities. And he placed his son, Kulashekhar, on the throne. Kulashekhar was an excellent king. He was endowed with all sorts of divine virtues and qualities. He was magnanimous, he was kind, he was just, he was very hardworking. He always held the welfare of the citizens as the dearmost need to his heart. And therefore all the citizens were extremely happy. They were feeling completely sheltered. Even the weak did not feel nervous. And the strong were always cautious that they wouldn't misuse their strength. Everywhere there was prosperity and happiness. He was an excellent administrator as well. And he had a good information system that made him understand what was going on in his kingdom. In this way, he was able to take care of his citizens very nicely. King Kulashekar, the Sri Sampradaya opinion is, was the incarnation of Krishna's Kaustubha jewel. You know, in Vaikuntha, all the devotees look like Vishnu. And if you were to go there and just see, you won't be able to distinguish Vishnu from the Vishnu Dutas. And there's only two ways you can distinguish. One is because of the Kaustubh money, the Kaustubh jewel that the Lord wears. And second, the Sri Vatsa, the whitish yellow strand of hair on the chest of the Lord. So these are the two distinguishing marks by which we can understand who the Lord is and who the devotees are. So Kulashekar is said to be, in the Sri Sampradaya, the incarnation of that Kaustubha jewel. So obviously he's not an ordinary person. And it appeared that as he was ruling the kingdom, he was just like a materialistic king. He was very efficient, very just, very good. Everything was true. But he was not spiritually inclined. At least he did not exhibit any spiritual inclination. Neither did he have any pressing call, any spiritual call from within. You see, when the Lord sends his representatives into the world, it's not always that they start their mission from childhood. They may start it at a later stage. They may start exhibiting their transcendental nature and characteristics at a later stage. Thus far, Kulashekar had exhibited his material qualities, which were also necessary for a king. Then gradually the Lord started showering his mercy upon Kulashekar. And the modes of passion and ignorance started disappearing from his heart. And the mode of goodness started increasing. He became more spiritually inclined with the onset of the mode of goodness. And then he started inquiring into spiritual truths. He started getting the brahmanas into the courtroom, and he would start studying all the scriptures and understanding the philosophy. And very soon, not only did he become an expert in the philosophy of understanding the nature of this world and distinguishing truth from falsehood, but he also understood the nature, the true nature of the Supreme Lord. And then this mood started getting deeper and deeper. And he started going into trances of ecstasy. And every day he would hear the brahmanas coming and reciting various scriptures. Sometimes he would start lamenting. He would hanker for being in some holy place, let's say Sri Rangam. And he would say, "Oh, I want to be there, I want to be there, I want to go there and settle there. I'm tired of all this materialistic kingship." Sometimes he would hanker to be in Tirumala, Tirupati. And sometimes he would want to be somewhere else, in some holy place. So this was his daily practice. And as every day passed by, King Kulashekar's devotion started getting deeper and deeper. And as he was getting more and more absorbed in that, he started paying less and less attention to the affairs of the state. And the ministers were naturally sisters were naturally getting worried. And as the time passed by, with great difficulty somehow or the other, he was managing to just continue his kingdom. But still he would spend a lot of time with devotees, the Sri Vaishnavas who would come there. He was especially fond of the Valmiki Ramayana. Lord Ram was his Ishtadev, his worshipable deity. And although he read many scriptures, but what was compulsory was a reading of the Valmiki Ramayana every single day. And whenever the episodes were narrated or recited by his guru, the Brahmana, who used to come every day, there would be great festivity, there would be celebration, there would be the deities would be taken out in procession, and then there would be grand feeding of all the devotees and others. This was a daily occurrence. So anything that was read there in the text of the Ramayana, it became a cause of celebration. And this went on. Now one day it so happened that the Brahmana, the Guru, he had reached the point where Lord Ram, Sita and Lakshman have entered into Panchavati from Dandakaranya forest. You remember some days ago we spoke about Panchavati, which is near modern-day Nasik. And that was the place where Shurpanakha, the sister of Ravana, resided. And she saw Lakshman and Ram, and she wanted to marry Lakshman. And then we know the story. Lakshman cut off her nose and her ears, and she went back howling with pain to her two other brothers, Kara and Dushan, who were living nearby in the place called Janasthan. And Kara and Dushan were furious. So they rushed towards Ram. Ram told Sita, told Lakshman, "You just stay here and guard Sita. Don't move an inch. I'll tackle these demons. You simply protect Sita. That's all." So Lakshman did not budge from that place. So Ram was standing alone. And Valmiki says that Lord Ram didn't even move his feet. And he fought with 14,000 demons, Kara, Dushan and their associates. And his bow and arrow were moving so fast that the demons couldn't even see how the arrows were being discharged. So in that particular part of that episode, Valmiki says, "And there stands the great hero alone, fighting with these 14,000 demons." And as the Brahmana was reading out this, this caught the attention of King Kulushekhar. "What? My lord is alone? All alone fighting 14,000 demons?" He was already in the trance of that pastime. He would go deep into the pastime. You know, so when we hear the Lord's pastime, it's not to be heard just like we're hearing the news or something like that. It's not something to be done casually. You know, the pastimes of the Lord and His messages are to be imbibed by, as Srila Prabhupada says, submissive oral reception, with a submissive and faithful and devoted heart, to be accepted like that, to be drunk through the years. So here was King Kulushekhar. With rapt attention, he would hear every word that was being read. And he would internalize it, and he would go into the mood of the passage that was being narrated, or the pastime that was happening. So in this case, he got so carried away in this mood that he immediately stood up. "What? My Lord is alone. He needs help. God forbid if something were to happen to him." So generals, he called his generals, "Get ready. We must immediately march towards Janasthan and give help to Ram." Now this was Kali Yuga, and that happened in Treta Yuga. It's all over. But you see, the Supreme Lord's pastimes, being transcendental, transcend space and time. So past, present, future holds no meaning, really, on the transcendental platform. So for those devotees who are tuned in to that platform through the frequency of devotion, they are able to understand, and they, for them, these pastimes are happening here and now in front of their very eyes. It's not something that is just that just happened millions of years ago, or we question, we lack faith whether actually these things happened or not. They completely enter into those pastimes. They live and breathe those pastimes as they are being narrated and even afterwards. So he got his soldiers together, and the soldiers and generals and ministers were looking at each other wondering, what's happened to our king? So anyway, the king was getting ready. He wouldn't hear anything. Some ministers who were bold enough to come to say something, he just chastised them and sent them away, and nobody came after that. Realizing that he was determined to go towards Panchavati, all the way from Kerala in the south, the ministers hit upon a plan. So they sent a group of soldiers in advance, secretly, not informing the king that they had sent, and told the soldiers, look, we're going to come with the king, we'll be marching towards Panchavati, but you guys, you people have to go right fast ahead, and then wheel around, turn around, and come back towards us, and you should give us the information that Lord Ram has already killed all those 14,000 demons, and there's no more danger. So they did exactly that. King Kulashekhar was in the full fury, in the full mood of destroying those demons and saving Lord Ram from this predicament. And as they were going, marching on, then they saw these soldiers coming in, coming back, and then they stopped. Your Highness, oh my Lord, Lord Ram has defeated the 14,000 demons and they're all dead, and the Lord is completely safe and he is with Sita Devi. So when he got this message, he was pacified. He said, good, then he went back to the kingdom. But this kind of thing would happen. Now the guru, who was the reciter of the Ramayana for him, he now was becoming more and more cautious. Now he would do a little cheating. He would not recite certain passages from the Ramayana that he felt would instigate the king to go into these moods. So he would only talk about happy things that were there in the Ramayana. If there was anything that wasn't quite happy or that had the potential to stir those kind of emotions that the king had demonstrated earlier, he would just skip that. So he was very careful. So things went on all right for some time. One day, however, he had to go out somewhere, that priest. So he told his son to substitute him and to read from the Valmiki Ramayana from where he had left off. Unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, the young man was unaware of the moods of the king. So he just started narrating and narrating, and they came to the point where Ravana abducted Sita. And he had taken her to Lanka. When he heard that, King Kulashekhar became furious. What? That evil wretch has taken away our mother Sita by force, by deceit. And I shall go there and rescue him. Come on, the general. He called all his generals and soldiers once again, everything. And all the soldiers and the ministers wondering, what on earth can we do now? And the king was completely in his mood, and he was marching towards the sea, because the whole kingdom was right to the sea and the shore of the sea. So within a short time he reached the shore and started wading into the water. Oh, you evil wretch, Ravana, how dare you do this? And he was going there with his weapons upraised. And the ministers behind didn't have the guts to even come close to him to tell him anything. So ferocious was his mood. The ministers stayed far away and they just stood like statues gazing at him from the shore. So there was total commotion there. A kind of a silent commotion because they didn't know what to do. Meanwhile, in the palace, the king's deity of Lord Ram started wondering, oh, I got to do something now. So he manifested himself in the ocean and he was coming in from the direction of Lanka towards the king. And he said, oh king, don't worry, I have now defeated Ravana and rescued Sita and brought her here. And there the Lord appeared. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nithai ki jai. So, and then the Lord was coming towards him. He said, don't worry, I have killed that evil Ravana. And naturally the king was very pacified. But he had already gone deep into the sea. So the Lord said, just as I take charge of the living entities in this world and take them across the ocean of material existence and drop them in Vaikuntha, my abode, similarly, I will carry you from here deep into the sea, right onto the shore, into your palace. And then by the Lord's mercy, King Kulushekhar returned to his palace. And the Lord saved the day. So time went by and the ministers were realizing that this isn't going to go work. And they started analyzing the problem. They said, what can we do to prevent this from happening? So they said, perhaps every time the king wants to go to some holy place, we should arrange a group of Vaishnavas to come as guests. So immediately when he sees the guests, then he'll stop everything and serve them, and a few days will go by. Then he again has the desire to go to some other holy place. They would arrange for another group of Vaishnavas to come as guests. And in this way, they somehow tactfully managed to postpone the king's impending departure to any holy place. But this caused another problem. Now there were Vaishnavas all the time, and the king was associating intimately with all of them, and he was completely engaged in serving those devotees. And he became so involved. Finally, the ministers, who were quite materialistic, they got fed up. They said, the problem is these Vaishnavas. These devotees are the real problem. They are the ones who have spoilt our king. And if he goes to the holy places, it's even worse there. Because there are more devotees over there. And he will get even more spoilt if he goes there. So somehow or the other, what we have to do now is to discredit these devotees. So that the king will not feel good about them. So they hatched a plot, a conspiracy. Very evil plot. Because they wanted to protect the kingdom. They had their own way of thinking. So they said that we will take away a golden plate from the storehouse of the deity. We will steal it and we will lay the blame at the doorstep of these devotees, these Vaishnavas, these priests. So they deliberately stole this, and when it was brought to the attention of the king and the king asked as to who the culprits were, they said, we suspect that it is these pujaris, the devotees who have done it. They have stolen this golden plate. And the king was furious. He said, that's impossible. These devotees, these Vaishnavas cannot do that. And if they have done it, I assure you that this scorpion or this cobra snake that is within this pot will bite my hand. So he inserted his hand into a vessel that had a cobra snake, and he brought it out without any injury. And then the ministers became ashamed and admitted that indeed this was a conspiracy that they had hatched. The king became completely disgusted with the ministers. He also started thinking, I'm weary not only of the ministers but of this whole material world. I just want to go and surrender to the Lord and serve him. And finally, he left everything. He only took his daughter, who was also a great devotee, and he went to Sri Rangam and resided there. So this was, in brief, the story of King Kulashekhar, and before that, the story of Ramadas of Bhadrachalam. History is replete with examples of innumerable such devotees. And it is so nourishing for our devotional creeper to hear about these exalted personalities. It feels very nice. It is very inspirational. And we can also learn many, many valuable lessons from them. So with this, our Ram Katha series for this year comes to an end. So thank you all very much for having come here for these 5 days and participated here. Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.